twofold. Number one, it hurts to be intimated.
This trial provides me with a little bit more freedom to choose between those drugs at the bedside.
Recent SCCM guidelines have suggested perhaps dexmedetomidine over propofol. Welcome back, everyone, to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. This is Mike Winters from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. We are ecstatic. We are so happy that you are joining us for this podcast. By the time you're listening to this podcast, it's actually going to be mid to late June. And, well, we have to acknowledge and send out a huge congratulations to all of the residents that have completed training, all of the fellows that have completed training, and a very warm welcome to all those that are just getting started, whether that be residency or fellowship. Super happy to have you all at our institutions and really looking forward to working clinically in the months and years ahead. Well, let me bring in my outstanding co-host here on CCPEM, Dr. Rob Rodriguez, Dr. Peter W., and Dr. John Greenwood. Going to head out to the West Coast and check in with Dr. Rodriguez. Rob, how are things?
Things are going great. It's been an interesting start to the new career here at UC Riverside. I'm very much enjoying the people out here and really enthusiastic about this position.
Outstanding. Dr. W, how's LSU?
Yes, at LSU, we're celebrating a national championship for the baseball team from the College World Series. We're excited about that, but also excited about our recent graduates, new groups of fellows, and welcoming new interns on board. It's an exciting time to be in academic medicine.
Well, congrats to that LSU baseball team. That's outstanding. And yes, can't wait for our new interns. I am working day one with them in the emergency department. Looking forward to that. And Dr. Greenwood, how are things in Philly?
Things are great. We are bracing ourselves for this heat dome. It was 99 degrees today, but I'm really looking forward to this coming Thursday where I'm going to get to see one of the FIFA Club World Cup games. I'm taking the family out to see Real Madrid versus FC Salzburg. So that's going to be a fun, exciting time. I'm sure there's games everywhere across the country to those who are listening and fans worldwide. So it'll be an exciting time for us to see some international soccer or football.
That sounds awesome. Well, let's turn our attention to the topic at hand. And well, as we just mentioned, our interns, our new fellows are starting. Inevitably, they're going to be resuscitating a critically ill patient. Inevitably, they're going to need to intubate and initiate mechanical ventilation. And while that's not the topic we're going to hit on this podcast, we are going to touch on a key component of what to do following intubation, initiation, and mechanical ventilation. And that is providing adequate sedation for our ventilated patient. And in recent years, there's been a push towards more utilization of dexmedetomidine. In fact, recent SCCM guidelines have suggested perhaps considering dexmedetomidine over propofol in intubated critically ill patients. And that brings us to the paper of hand that is really hot off the press, as we like to do here on CCPEM. It is lead author Walsh. It is published online in JAMA, and it is the A2B randomized clinical trial entitled Dexmedetomidine or Clonidine-Based Sedation Compared with Propofol in Critically Ill Patients. Dr. W, I'm going to stop talking, turn it over to you to set the stage as well as the objective for the A2B trial.
Well, thank you, Dr. Winters. And just a little bit about the background. We all know that critically ill patients who receive mechanical ventilations require sedation. Sometimes in the emergency department, we're using prolonged paralytics and slow to get the sedatives on board. So just a reminder to our listeners to make sure that we're cognizant of that. At present, in our EDs and in the ICU, propofol is the most widely used sedative medication for our patients who are on mechanical ventilation. Recent trials suggested that dexmedetomidine, an alpha-2 adrenergic receptor agonist, may reduce delirium and therefore may reduce the duration of mechanical ventilation. So clonidine is also an alpha-2 adrenergic receptor agonist and is often used, not in this country, but in other countries, often used as an adjunct sedatives for those patients on mechanical ventilation. To date, there is no high-quality research that has evaluated dexmedetomidine or clonidine-based sedation compared to propofol in critically ill patients on mechanical ventilation. So there's our background. Now, what is the objective of this paper? It's actually to compare the effectiveness and safety of dexmedetomidine and clonidine-based sedation versus propofol-based sedation as a primary sedation for mechanically ventilated, critically ill patients. So now it's time to turn it over to John to talk to us about the methods. John?
Absolutely. That's a great summary, Peter. And this is a really interesting paper and trial. So, this was a pragmatic, multi-center, open-label, randomized controlled trial that took place in 41 ICUs over in the UK. And they largely included adults over the age of 18 who were receiving mechanical ventilation in an ICU setting that were sedated with propofol initially after intubation. And required at least 24 hours more of mechanical ventilation. And these patients were all enrolled within 48 hours of initiation of their mechanical ventilation. Now, they did exclude some patients, and I think this primarily goes along with the known side effects and adverse effects of dexmedetomidine. The first was patients with acute brain injury, the second was those receiving prolonged neuromuscular paralysis, assuming that one of the benefits of dex is it generally is a lighter sedative. And so we don't want our patients being aware and paralyzed at the same time. Patients who are bradycardic with a heart rate less than 50 for at least an hour, and that's another known side effect of Presidex or dexmedetomidine, that it often can cause bradycardia. And they also excluded patients with an expected survival of less than 24 hours. The intervention was assigned to patients who are randomized in a 1:1:1 ratio of either dexmedetomidine with an initial dose of 0.7 mics per kilo per hour and a maximum dose of 1.4 mics per kilo per hour. They also could have been assigned to the clonidine arm with an initial dose of 1 mic per kilo per hour or a max dose of 2 mics per kilo per hour. So this was going to be in an intravenous form as opposed to the oral form, I think, that we're all much more familiar with, or propofol. And there were no specific dose guidance given for propofol. They just received usual care. So this was an open label study, and the drug was initiated within 2 hours of randomization. Now, medical staff determined whether deep sedation, so remember, we're using RASS scores of -4 or -5 when it was indicated. And if deep sedation was not indicated or requested, they would move to a more standard moderate sedation of a RASS of -2 to 1. The RASS was measured every 4 hours. A CAM ICU was measured twice a day. And then the choice of an opioid for analgesia was determined by the clinical team. It's always important to remember that sedation doesn't always equal analgesia, and this trial took that consideration here in terms of the clinical care provided. Other sedatives such as benzodiazepines were generally discouraged for this trial, and propofol was permitted if the max dose of either dexmedetomidine or clonidine was reached because of some of the dose-limiting side effects that we talked about before. Now, as far as mechanical ventilation weaning, sedation discontinuation, and the assessment for readiness of extubation, guidance was provided, but it wasn't protocolized in this trial. Now, the primary outcome was a fairly simple one. It was time from randomization to successful extubation. They did look at some secondary outcomes, which included 180-day all-cause mortality, ICU length of stay, time to first RASS of -2 or greater, time to first day without agitation, deep sedation or pain behavior, and then rates of delirium or coma. And in addition to those secondary outcomes, they looked at a few safety outcomes, which are very relevant to the interventions of interest, which included severe bradycardia, cardiac arrhythmias, or cardiac arrest. So those were the out that was an outline of the methods of this trial. So let's move on to Rob. Rob's going to lead us through the results. What did they find?
Yeah, thanks, John. So they enrolled a total of 1,404 patients in this study. Their mean age was 59 years. They were 64% male, and their mean APACHE 2 scores were about 20, which is moderately to severely sick patient population. The median time from initiation of mechanical ventilation to randomization was 21 hours. So they basically got most of them within the first day of the initiation of mechanical ventilation. In terms of their allocation between the three groups, it was balanced and well matched. There were 457 patients in the dex group, 476 patients in the clonidine group, and 471 patients in the propofol group. And their baseline characteristics were basically well balanced between the three groups. In terms of their primary outcome, which was, as John mentioned, the time to successful extubation, there were no statistically significant differences between the three groups. The dex group versus propofol, the hazard ratio was 1.09. Comparing the clonidine versus propofol, the hazard ratio was 1.05, and there was no significant difference in the number of patients receiving mechanical ventilation 7 days after randomization. No difference between the three groups. In terms of the secondary outcomes, they were also pretty similar. In 180-day all-cause mortality between dex and propofol, the hazard ratio was 0.98. Between clonidine and propofol, the hazard HR was 1.04. There were no statistical differences there. There was no difference in time to ICU discharge among the survivors. Time to first RAS of negative 2 or greater. There was a median number of 12 hours to first achieve that RAS score was similar between all three groups. The one difference in the secondary outcomes that was statistically significant was the rates of agitation that were higher over 7 days between comparing both the dexmedetomidine groups and the clonidine groups to propofol. So both of those groups had higher rates of agitation than the propofol group. In terms of rates of delirium and coma, there were no significant differences. And with regards to the primary safety outcomes, the prevalence of bradycardia was higher in the dex and clonidine groups than the propofol groups, or 33% in the dex group, 33% in the clonidine group, and 20% in the propofol group, leading to basically higher rates of what they called cardiac arrhythmias.
All right. Thanks, Rob, for bringing us home with the results. Very interesting. Let me just touch on a few limitations identified by the authors, and I really am most interested in getting your opinions, reflections on this clinical trial, its limitations, and then its potential implications, if any, for our clinical practice. John, as you mentioned in the methods, this was open label, so it was unblinded from a limitation standpoint, taking that into account. In addition, the authors called out that that primary outcome was really measured by unblinded researchers. So, thinking of those two items as a limitation. The other, in terms of patients randomized to either dex or clonidine, a significant number of them had propofol. In fact, almost three quarters, or just about three quarters of them, had propofol co-administered. Now, importantly, this was at a much lower dose than the usual care arm of this particular trial. I think, as we mentioned previously, also, they did not protocolize weaning, standardize any use of analgesics, and then the sedation targets. And lastly, from that patient exclusion, it's not applicable to patients with acute brain injury. So, having said that, gentlemen, let me turn back to you. Let me start, Rob, with you in terms of implications for clinical practice. Certainly, there's been a move towards greater utilization of dexmedetomidine, some studies that have suggested perhaps reducing delirium and also the duration of mechanical ventilation. But in this 1,400 patient trial, multi-centers over 40 ICUs in the UK really didn't bear out any effect on the duration of mechanical ventilation or time to successful extubation or the incidence of delirium or coma. Thoughts, Rob, on the A2B trial?
Yeah, so I have to confess that I've never used clonidine as a sedative adjunct. I guess I've used it occasionally in awake patients who are in the ED who might be undergoing opioid withdrawal, and that's about it. I never use clonidine as a sedative, so can't really comment on that. I'm very interested to learn about how they use that. I would say that the results of this study to me are not all that surprising. I think that they're not necessarily going to change my practice. The times that I use Dex are when it's a clear case of, let's say alcohol withdrawal or delirium, and I'll use Dex in some of these patients to try to avoid getting them intubated. My practice is that you can use Dex in a non-intubated patient, whereas you can't really use propofol. So I'm going to continue to use Dex in that manner in those cases when I'm trying to avoid having somebody get intubated. But otherwise, this is not really going to change my management.
All right, outstanding comments, Rob. John, I'm going to circle around to you for your thoughts.
Yeah, so I sort of have come to the point in my career when I no longer get frustrated by quote negative trials, and I now look at them as providing me with license to practice within the art of medicine, if you will, that there's no difference in outcome. So I can make a decision that's based on a personalized care that I want to provide to the patient here. And I think that's my takeaway with all this is that kind of what Rob said is that I'm going to look at the patient in front of me and look at the side effects of the sedative and make a decision based off of what's the safest choice for the patient in front of me. Now, if I have a severely hypotensive patient where I'm worried that propofol is going to cause a little bit more decrease in systemic vascular resistance, causing hypotension, or maybe have some unwanted cardiovascular side effects, I may not choose propofol. I may lean towards something like dexmedetomidine or something a little bit different. But if my patient's bradycardic or they need frequent neuro checks because I'm really concerned about their mental status and I want to make sure that there's no changes, I may lean towards Precedex or dexmedetomidine because of its mechanism as an alpha agonist. This trial just reinforces that and provides me with a little bit more freedom to choose between those drugs at the bedside.
Outstanding comments. Dr. W, you're bringing us home here.
Yeah, just a few points. So clonidine is used most widely in Europe ICUs as an adjunctive sedative. It typically isn't being used in the US ICUs. And that's why our collective experience with it is so low. It is considered as an add-on agent if you're not getting your goals met for sedation while you're already on something like dexmedetomidine or propofol. The concern I have for this and for our listeners is twofold. Number one, it hurts to be intubated. And I know that we're talking about sedatives, but to be intubated on mechanical ventilation, I would promote the use of fentanyl in those patients, not just a sedative. So I'm a strong proponent of that. The second piece is all of these agents that were studied, clonidine, propofol, and dexmedetomidine, are lipophilic and wind up in fat depositions. So when we're dosing things on total body weight, we can get into trouble with those patients with some increased deposition. We've seen it with benzodiazepines, most notably, but these other agents do the same type of thing. So just be cautious to our listeners in how we're dosing this with our elevated BMI patients, which predominate the population in our ICUs.
Really helpful and insightful comments for Peter and Rob and John. Really outstanding analysis and just kind of bringing things home on this A to B trial and implications and just thoughts for all of us as we move forward from this trial and just continue to care for ventilated patients and provide appropriate analgesia and sedation. We are so thankful once again that you've listened to this podcast. Really looking forward to talking with you on our next podcast. If you have any questions, please be sure to shoot us an email through the website. Really love corresponding with all of you that take the time to feedback your comments about each of these papers that we review each month here on CCPEM. Once again, welcome to all of our new interns, all of our new fellows. Cannot wait to be working alongside of you in our various clinical settings. And we very much will look forward to talking to you on our next podcast. Bye for now.